thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to another episode of Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am your host. Hope you're having a great day. Hope you're having a good week. And hope you enjoy the show today. It's a Wonderful Life, written and directed by Frank Capra and starring Jimmy Stewart, is not only one of my favorite Christmas movies of all time, but one of my favorite movies of all time. It's a film that expresses many values and virtues: sacrifice, selflessness, faithfulness, integrity, compassion, grace, generosity, the meaning of a life well lived, and the power of friendship. In the latter half of the movie, George Bailey finds himself at his wit's end and hits rock bottom, to the point of actually standing on the edge of a bridge, contemplating the act of taking his own life. George arrived at this point of desperation and hopelessness after he received the news that his Uncle Billy had misplaced almost all of the money that his building and loan company had to its name. George believed that this would almost certainly lead to, in his own words, bankruptcy, scandal, and prison. Poor old George had hastily come to the conclusion that there was simply nothing left for which to live. In comparison to the greedy and villainous Mr. Potter, who owned everything and had everything, George seemingly had nothing. He found himself in an impossible situation, with no hope in sight. With everything stacked against him, he looked for a way out. Arriving at his last resort, he stood at the edge of a bridge, staring at the water underneath on a frigid and snowy winter night. But a miracle happens. Divine intervention. God sends a wingless guardian angel named Clarence to help change George's perspective and change his trajectory. The angel shows George what life would look like without him, renewing George's personal sense of meaning, purpose, and worth, and giving George a reason to live and a reason to hope, even a reason to be joyful in the midst of tragedy, to literally laugh in the face of personal misfortune. See, the angel showed George that though his circumstances appeared rather grim, and though it seemed as if life simply couldn't get any worse, life could indeed get far worse, and life could indeed be far worse, not just for him personally, but for his friends, his loved ones, and for the surrounding community as a whole. Through the intervention of his lowly and unassuming guardian angel, George came to realize how good he actually had it in comparison to what he could have had, or to what others around him may have had. Like, for instance, what Mr. Martini's family had when they first met George. Just a loaf of bread, salt, wine, a goat, and thanks to George, albeit small and simple, a roof over their heads. Thank you. On last week's episode, I briefly mentioned the notion of global poverty and the global standard for poverty when I was discussing contemporary views on the United States. In that episode, when talking about some of the more critical and cynical views of the younger generations, I alluded to the idea that, not unlike George Bailey, young Americans may not fully understand how good they actually have it in America. That maybe they're comparing themselves to the wrong people. And maybe a more robust and expansive global and historical understanding would help broaden our perspective and help cultivate virtues of contentment, fulfillment, joy, gratitude, and thankfulness. Virtues that contribute greatly to our quality of life, to the good life. On today's podcast, the first of three on American poverty, I want to begin to explore this claim more fully, looking particularly at the key definitions and standards that are used in assessing such matters. Before I begin, though, I want to be clear who my intended audience is here. These episodes are not for the poor and impoverished. That would be rather cruel, I think. Instead, they're for people like me, who make up the middle and upper classes in America. The type of people that I imagine listen to this podcast. The point of these episodes is to hopefully help to, not unlike what Clarence set out to do for George Bailey, alleviate some of the dread and despair that many modern Americans possess when thinking about finances and when reflecting upon their lot in life. The World Bank is arguably the leading authority on this issue. So in these episodes, it will function as my go-to source. It's a nonpartisan organization made up of 189 member countries that is cited by almost all media outlets, whether conservative or liberal, when discussing issues of poverty. Let's begin our analysis with some basic definitions. The first is relative poverty, which is a measurement of income inequality within a social context. It doesn't measure hardship or material deprivation, but rather the disparities of wealth among income groups. It looks at the context of the need, how one social group compares to others. For example, the standard for poverty in the United States is much different than the standards in other places throughout the world. According to the World Bank, quote, in the United States, 10.5% of the population, 34 million people, live in poverty as of 2019. For an individual in the U.S., the poverty line is $12,880 a year, or about $35.28 per day, end quote. That's the relative standard set in the United States, which is still understood as being one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Poverty has greatly decreased in the U.S. over the last several decades. In America, the highest poverty rate on record was 22%. That was in the 1950s. The lowest was 10.5%. That was in 2019. There were 4.2 million fewer people in poverty in 2019 than the year before. As of 2019, the poverty rate was the lowest since the statistic was first kept in 1959. The 2019 mark was the fifth consecutive annual decline in poverty. Poverty in the United States is mostly relegated to the South. 9 of the 10 states with the highest poverty rates in the U.S. are in the southern portion of America. That includes Mississippi, where 19.4% of the population sit below the poverty line, Louisiana, with 18.4% of the population, Arkansas, with 15%, West Virginia, with 14.9%, Kentucky, with 14.6%, Alabama, with 14.4%, South Carolina, 13.9%, Georgia, 13.5%, and North Carolina, with 12.9% of its population sitting below the poverty line. In a particular country, the poverty line is relative to the overall wealth of the country. So, in a wealthy country, the poverty line is going to be set at a much higher dollar amount than it would be in a poor country. Full disclosure here. By the relative standard that has been set in the United States, I've lived in poverty for about half of my adult life, and yet I've never experienced true hunger, and I've never lacked access to clean water, and I've never lacked opportunities for employment, and I've never been without housing or a place to rest my head at night. By this relative standard, I have been impoverished throughout much of my adult life, and yet I found a way to live somewhat comfortably despite this fact. Now, there are several factors that have contributed to my personal situation. Some of them I'll discuss in episodes 2 and 3. But this is in part why relative poverty is not the best criterion to use when assessing true poverty. Our second definition is absolute poverty. According to the World Bank, this is, quote, a measure of the minimal requirements necessary to afford the minimal standards of life-sustaining essentials. Food, clothing, shelter, clean water, sanitation, education, and access to healthcare. The standards are consistent over time and are the same in different countries. For example, one absolute measurement is the percentage of a population that consumes enough food daily to sustain the human body. This standard, 2,000 to 2,500 calories per day, is applied worldwide and across all cultures. End quote. The World Bank chooses to define poverty in absolute terms. According to the absolute, or global, or international standard, those living on less than $1.90 per day live in what is referred to as extreme poverty. The World Bank also tracks what they refer to as moderate poverty. Those living on less than $3.20 per day in lower middle-income countries and less than $5.50 per day in upper middle-income countries live in moderate poverty. According to the World Bank, about 9.2% of the world, or 689 million people, live in extreme poverty on less than $1.90 a day. If you're wondering, this dollar amount is based on the international dollar. According to the World Bank, quote, an international dollar would buy in the cited country a comparable amount of goods and services a U.S. dollar would buy in the United States. This term is often used in conjunction with purchasing power parity, or PPP data. End quote. Due to inflation, the global standard of $1.90 a day will be increased to $2.15 a day in the fall of 2022. The World Bank gives the following reasons for why they define poverty in absolute rather than relative terms. Quote, in the United States, a household that has a refrigerator, televisions, air conditioning can be considered impoverished if its income falls below a certain threshold. In other countries, those households might be thought of as wealthy. Many families reported as living in poverty are not poor in the ordinary sense, or as understood by most Americans. Impoverished families often have household appliances and adequate food, and live in adequate shelter. A higher standard of living than even middle-class families maintained several decades ago. Therefore, current government methodology of measuring poverty, which calculates income inequality and not actual material deprivation, could be overstating the extent of poverty in the United States. End quote. Money alone, or income alone, doesn't tell the whole story here. The World Bank acknowledges this. In another place, they state, quote, there are many non-monetary indicators, education, health, sanitation, water, electricity, etc., that are extremely important for understanding the many dimensions of poverty that people may experience. These are complementary to monetary measures of poverty and must be considered as part of the efforts to improve the lives of the poorest. End quote. This is why the World Bank has established a somewhat new standard, the MPM, the Multidimensional Poverty Measure. Here's what the World Bank says about it. Quote, the data for the MPM is derived from harmonized surveys in the World Bank's Global Monitoring Database. The latest estimates for the world are available for circa 2018, using household survey data collected within a 3-year window between 2015 to 2021. The MPM is composed of 6 indicators. Consumption or income, educational attainment, educational enrollment, drinking water, sanitation, and electricity. These are mapped into 3 dimensions of well-being: monetary, education, and basic infrastructure services. End quote. When you look at the overview of their map, which is posted on their website, you will see that Africa, Latin America, Europe, and South Asia are the greatest victims. You will also see that the United States doesn't even register. This episode, and all episodes of Thinkersensitive, are available on thinkersensitive.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinkersensitive.